Can you give me a mic test?
Is rolling.
Testing, okay. Testing, testing.
I'm good.
All right, we're rolling too.
15 minutes, I'm going to dip and take it out.
Okay.
Take 15 seconds.
All right.
All right, I'll start. welcome back to the Movie Vault. We got Ben and Zach here again, and we have a special guest. What's your name?
Bernie. What?
Yeah. And this isn't just any Bernie. I wanted to properly introduce our guest. He's a distinguished director, musician, and artist.
Sorry, guys, I have a lot of echo video. Now. Sorry to interrupt. When you talk, Zach, I think it's like I hear lots of echo. I can't even understand what he's saying.
Are
maybe it's the headphones. Not having headphones.
What? Were you muted when
no,
I?
No, I wasn't muted when you talked. So let's.
Okay.
Let's just start over. I'm gonna go ahead and mute. Okay.
How about now? It should be fixed, right?
Oh yeah. Now. Yeah, all good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just make sure. Okay. 3, 2, 1. All right. It's me, Zach, here again with Ben, and we have a special guest, Mr. Rao right here. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, of course. Thanks for coming on. This is a big moment for the Movie Vault. It's our first actual person who's been involved in real big movies before. We've had on the podcast. Ben, give him his real introduction, though.
All right. So, our listeners of the Movie Vault, I want to introduce to you our distinguished guest today. He's a director, a musician, and artist. He is most known for his music video, Teddy, and his three feature films, Ina and the Blue Tiger Sauna, The Baldlands, and especially Killer Sofa, the latter of which was featured in episode 26 of the Movie Vault. So, if everyone in Vault Nation could please give Bernie Rao a warm welcome, that would be great, virtually wherever you're listening from. But we're very excited to have you on, Bernie. We sort of stumbled upon your work with Killer Sofa just on Amazon Prime with some friends, and we had a very enjoyable time watching the movie and reviewing it. I don't really know what we said, so don't hold anything against us. I haven't listened to the episode in a while. But actually, we brought Bernie on today primarily to review one of his favorite movies, I believe 1998 film Henry Fool, directed by Hal Hartley. So I just wanted to give you a chance at the start of the episode to maybe give some context for why you chose this movie and like what your experience was when you first watched the movie.
Yeah, look, when I watched this movie when I was in film school, and this was like I'm gonna date myself here, but it was like maybe about 20 years ago, right? And I was living the artist life, right? I didn't have any money. I was living in a camper van, and I was trying to be an artist. And when I found this movie in a yard sale, in a VHS tape, with no, just the title, right? There was no cover, not anything, and the tape was broken, right? So for me, part of why I love this movie so much is because I remember that moment of discovering something, which I didn't know what it was, and I glued the tape and I watched this, and I was amazed by this film, right? And it still speaks to me to this day. So I cannot say like if this movie has a cult following. I've never went into investigating what happened with this movie or Hal Hartley, but that's why I came across this movie. That's how I came across this movie, and I just love it. And I found out that he won the best screenplay award at Cannes, which makes all the sense because the screenplay is solid, is amazing, right? So yeah, that's why I suggested this film, because not a lot of people know about this film, and I think it should be out there.
Yeah, that's great. I kind of had a similar reaction to the script particularly. But before that, we're going to give a brief plot summary for the listeners. So it's just kind of, this is just from IMDb. So it's just, the socially inept garbage man Simon is befriended by Henry Fool, a witty, roguish, but talentless novelist. Henry opens a magical world of literature to Simon, who turns his hand to writing the great American poem. As Simon begins his controversial ascent to the dizzying heights of Nobel Prize winning poet, Henry sinks into a life of drinking and lowlife bars. The two friends fall out and lose touch until Henry's criminal past catches up with him, and he needs Simon's help to flee the country. So It was a very, as you, I mean, this plot is very unusual compared to a lot of movies that I've seen. I'm very happy that you recommended it, because after I watched it, I actually texted Ben and I said, I can't believe I loved this movie. It was great. I said something along those lines. So you have at least that going for you. So your recommendations are good. You'll have to give us some more recommendations after this. But I'm not just trying to compliment you the whole way, but it was really good. It was really good. But yeah, I mean, we kind of were thinking about it afterwards, and there were a couple themes that we were thinking of. But we want to know, what was your kind of first impression of this movie when you watched it? Not just if you liked it or not, but what kind of emotions did it evoke? Why did you relate to it? Why did you like it? Why did you like the characters, maybe, or something of the sort?
Like, there's something in this movie that has been lost in cinema these days, I think. And it's a certain theatrical aspect to filmmaking, right? Because this movie is so theatrical, and these characters are so... you know, they're almost like a stereotype in a way, but the way they speak and the way they move around the areas where they are, right, it's almost like watching a theater play but shot with a camera. And that's how movies used to be back in the day, right? And that's why I love this movie so much, because it's so mechanical in a way, but you have a sense of that you're watching another reality, and you know this is not real life, because nobody speaks like this and nobody moves like the way these characters do. And that's why I love this movie so much, because it's a masterclass of how to direct actors and how to write scenes with a beginning, middle, and end, right? And it's so in a such a delicious and poetic way, right? I don't know if I can put it this in another way, but yeah, I mean, for me, I think every scene is hilarious in this film, like scene after scene, even the most the scenes which are supposed to be, you know, serious, I'm always with a smile, and that's why I love this film so much. It's like there's a lot of humor here, although we are talking about serious stuff, because obviously Harry was in jail for sleeping with a 13-year-old girl, right? This is kind of awful, obviously. But, you know, I think there's a redemption story for him, for his character. And after watching the movie, you have a sense that he was framed somehow, right? Because as he presents himself in the film, he has a lot of flaws. And he's a flawed man, obviously. But you got a sense that he didn't deserve what happened to him somehow, right? And that's why I think this movie manages to put me in that position of thinking that it was not his fault. And that's amazing. I mean, it just goes about, you know, how to write the story and how to transport you there as an audience member. But I don't know. What do you guys think? What's your emotions?
So... one of the things that I kept seeing people talk about this film was that it was almost surreal, and that made sense when you talked about it, like being a mechanical in a sense that, but mechanical in a way that's like abnormal to us. And it kind of made sense. We watched a Hal Hartley interview a little bit before this to try to get like a grasp on who he was, and he was like name dropping Fellini, and so it kind of like all makes sense with like where his head is. But I thought it was interesting how it was able to be abstract, but yet it's not truly a surreal film that like really breaks the bounds of reality. It stays true to the rules of its world, but the rules of its world are just totally different than the rules of our world.
That's good.
Just even in the way that like Henry just walks in with very little explanation into Simon's life and is just pretty easily accepted right away as being Henry's or Simon's friend. Henry being Simon's friend, and this is just like, just becomes a thing, and they all waltz into Mr. Deng's store, and that becomes like their place, and none of this really makes sense in the context of the world that I live in, at least. But you never question it when you're watching the movie. So that was one thing that really stuck out to me. I liked how you pointed out, because I think one of the things that like when I first started watching this movie, I was like, man, this is like, I get that it's a comedy, but there's a lot of like like dark kind of subject matter being tossed around. It's a little, it could be a little disturbing, but then I think you kind of, I kind of realized how, like, maybe as you explained that the film kind of reveals some things about, you know, potentially Henry being framed, and I'm trying to figure out how to finish this thought, like, like it's able to take the serious subject matter and make it, which is the characteristic of like a black comedy. It's able to take something that shouldn't be funny at all and turn it into scenes that are hilarious. Even the way that like they utilize all different types of humor, dialogue and deadpan humor obviously being number one, but even there's a couple of sequences of just like, you know, bodily fluids being used as humor, which seems a little childish, but somehow again it doesn't break the rules of this movie or this universe at all. Even when you're uncomfortable and you kind of want it to stop, it just, that's how this universe works. So I really did enjoy it. I do admit, like, since I had school and stuff, I kind of like separated over my viewings. I kind of wish I was able to have just watched it all at once, because I think that would have been a better viewing. But at the same time, the movie did kind of segment itself in ways. There was like a 7-year gap at some point. So, and seeing like the relationship, like the relationships, like the redemption that he gets when the stepdad who's abusing his daughter is killed, and you see how he's being like accused of murder, but you see how he was actually, you know, acting in self-defense and was somewhat potentially justified in that. And then Simon gets to sort of get some redemption for not fulfilling his promise of publishing Henry's novel by, you know, having him take his identity. So there's all kinds of different.
Yeah, I love the idea that this guy, and I met so many people in my life like this. If you're into the arts and you move into this artsy fartsy kind of world, right? You meet people with great personalities, which are like Henry, right? It's like someone is working on a huge project, which is going to be huge, but nobody can read. And then I love when Simon reads and it says, oh man, this is bad, this is awful, right? But it doesn't matter, because Henry for Simon is the mentor, right? And, you know, he is the art, Henry. His art is not supposed to be good, right? Simon is the real artist, which is a guy that first, at the beginning of the movie, can't even articulate one phrase, right? But by the end of the movie, he wins the Nobel Prize, right? This is amazing, from rags to riches, right? And I love how the thing gets inverted. Has, like, Harry goes from being the artist to being the garbage man. I mean, this is amazing. This is amazing poetry, right?
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. And see, I think he has this exact same uniform. They just changed the name. And then, of course, I had kind of written down, like, it was interesting that, like, at the start of the movie, Simon kind of references the fact that, like, people think he's mentally challenged. But it seems like one of the points of the movie was that somebody just needed to show Simon how to get his thoughts out. He had a lot of thoughts, but he was perceived as, like, being somebody who just had no thought and was just, you know, sort of a mentally challenged individual, even. Mm-hmm.
Sort of an outcast, and they're all outcasts in their way, right? And this is like small town America, and this is a place where dreams go to die, right? That's how I imagine, like, this little town where they live, right? I mean, every country in the world has this type of suburban nightmare towns, right? And that's something like this story can happen in that town. I mean, that's, yeah, this movie is so great. I love it.
Yeah, I think my first takeaway was, wow, these characters are making me laugh the entire time. I think especially Henry, I was just so, like, I don't know, I was just maybe surprised, because I've never seen a character like Henry in a movie before, I guess, where he's so, like, he's so focused, and he's so, like, I don't know, he's, like, good with words, but he's also terrible at what he does. So it's just an interesting...
Yeah, but he says things, everything Harry says, it's completely larger than life. Like, the first thing he says to Simon, if I remember, is like, get off your knees, right? Like, because Simon is a man on his knees, right? He's been crushed by the world, and Harry's gonna get him out. And things like, I've been bad repeatedly, but I don't mean to brag about it, right? This is like, the things he says are amazing. Like, an honest man is always in trouble. Like, these things, these are things you print on a shirt, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I think it's...
No, yeah, I agree. I think his, yeah, just for me, his character just was so, I mean, like you said, larger than life. He was just out there, and it really did, like, surprise me, perplex me, just the juxtaposition of how he was bad at his job, but he would also have, like, these kind of, to me, they seemed like grand illustrations or ideas. You know, he seemed to have some type of wisdom, even though he himself would not follow that advice. You know, I think of Simon, where another character where he's great because, yeah, you, in the beginning, you think of him as this robotic character who maybe wouldn't come out of his shell as much, but by the end of the movie, you know, he's saying the things that need to be said, and you're the one that is rooting for him because he's going to come and save the day when his nephew comes and gets him. You know, you think that all these all these things don't change, but the 7-year gap does show a lot of change for these characters, even though it's less change for Henry, I'd say. But it's a really interesting movie to me that I'm not gonna probably forget anytime soon, unless I need to rewatch it, of course. But I think just those two characters and their relationship, and then Faye and Mary and everybody, and when she killed herself, that was very surprising to me. Although I kind of saw a little, I saw some foreshadowing with that. You know, you can't leave her alone, stuff like that. But also. There's also a storyline, like a character arc for Faye, you know? She was always wanting to have sex with people at the beginning, but then by the end of the movie, before the 7-year gap, she's trying to actually find jobs, you know? She's like, oh, I'm going to go here and look for a job there and look for a job there. And then, you know, by the end of the movie, she's mm-hmm. a mother. She's taking care of the 7-year-old kid basically by herself. You know, she's trying to keep her son away from Henry almost, because Henry's taking him to the bar and just all these weird things and making him smoke. But it is cool to see all these character arcs, and that's what stuck out to me more so. And then the storyline in general was just so unique that I was just captivated, almost on the edge of my seat. So
I think it's great. That's why the script is so good, because no character is gratuitous in the way, you know. Like, they all have an arc, and the mother is an interesting character, because you think, oh, this is just a depressed woman that was stuck in with two kids with no father, right? And now she's on medication, but then you see her playing the piano mm-hmm. when she reads Simon's poem, right? And that is the power of that poem, that we never know what he writes about. And that's brilliant that they don't show you, because it leaves you wondering, man, what is this? You know, it's kind of pornographic, or, you know, that's the only thing, you know. But the mother at some point starts playing the piano, and she's actually very good, right? And Simon comes and says, please don't stop. And the mother says something like, well, I was never good enough, right? So this is the, you mm-hmm. know, the struggle of the artist, right? Where he's like, mm-hmm. well, why am I doing art? Does somebody care? Will I ever be good enough? And that's when she kills herself. And that's, you know, that's so poetic and brilliant, I think. Yeah.
No, Ben and I actually pointed that out as the thesis of the movie. So we have the line right here. Simon comes up to Mary and says, that was nice. And she says, yes, it was nice, but it was unremarkable. And he says, does it matter? And she said, yes, it does. And we're like, that pretty much represents what the movie's trying to say about artists in general. You know, is it only meaningful if it stands out? You know, we obviously are like, no, there are meaningful things that don't stand out. Obviously, this movie is an example. I've never heard of this movie. It's not a big famous movie, but it is meaningful. So I think the movie almost answers its own question, which is kind of funny. But it is an interesting conundrum of you have Henry, this character that's, you know, writing this really long book that he's been working on for, what is it, 6 years or so? Or how long? I don't remember how long he was working on it. The confession.
Confession.
And that, again, like, that's larger than life. That sounds so dramatic. You know, last confessions are these big theologians or these big historians or philosophers will write these big confessions, you know. But that's how he saw himself. You know, he saw himself as that type of guy.
I mean, Harry compares himself to Socrates, right? When they say, what he did with his pedophilia, right? It's like, well, Socrates was the same, right? So this is who Harry is.
Yeah, right? That he was spoiling the youth.
of Athens. Yeah. And this is the type of thing a guy like this would say, right? It's,
I think what it really did, other than the characters, what stuck out to me about this movie was, like, how complex the relationship between artists and, well, they have the artist, the publisher, the sort of the critic, and the mentor kind of in one, because mm-hmm. Henry is critiquing Simon's work but also sort of mentoring him and saying that it's good. And we get this whole idea that, like, in order for art to be good, most people won't be able to perceive it as such. Only the person who writes it. And so when Simon reads it, he's like, this is terrible. But he's like, I know you'll say something like, well, taste is relative. And this is always an interesting thing to me as somebody who is now, like, I enjoy a lot of movies, kind of as this is part of, like, a hobby of watching movies and kind of critiquing them, and then music the same way. And you notice, like, the more, like, refined critics find something, the less popular it tends to be mainstream, although there's this sort of perfect balance of, like, popularity and critique or positive critiques or positive criticism, I guess. That's maybe a negative of itself, but positive reviews, I guess, would be the better way to say that. Like, I think of, like, the Beatles achieved that, or more recently, yeah, maybe a band like Radiohead, in that, like, they have large fan bases and yet are able to garner, like, basically music reviewers saying these are the best bands that we have. Obviously, it's still only a small sliver of what exists, so nobody can really truly say what is the best. Mm-hmm. So I thought that the way that this movie and how Zach kind of showed, like, it's sort of, like, in itself an example of something that is, like, it was successful in some senses, but it's also not very well known, because it did win at Cannes, which is a big deal, I would think, but it didn't make a ton of money.
It's huge. I mean, Hal Hartley, he had a career and he keeps on making films. He's as a sort of a persona non grata in terms of the industry. I think that's how the feeling I got, and that's because he shoots this like a true independent filmmaker. And the more I advance in my career of making films, because I do make films, and I understand why is put in that situation, but that's maybe another conversation. But it has to do with politics and where the money comes from and what you are supposed to do with the money. And I think Hal Hartley, it's like, you know, filmmakers like Jim Jarmusch and some filmmakers in America and all over the world who just don't conform, right? They just do what they want to do, and you cannot force them to do a certain type of film, or, you know, they don't care, you know? And I admire that. It's like, well, I'll do what I'll do, right? Anyways, so that's why I think he never really made it big, in a way. But I don't know. I don't know his career, so I'm not sure. Like, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's
watching the interview with him, it seemed like everything you're saying is completely accurate to him. He had this moment. I like would love to be have a better knowledge of the history, but I know in the 90s there was a big independent film movement. Yeah. Like, of course, people talk about Quentin Tarantino as being one of those guys. He basically achieved mainstream success, and you could question maybe he got, like, more freedom to do what he wanted from big studios, but there's still, like, all kinds of politics associated with those sort of things. But Hal Hartley had opportunities to potentially do stuff like that, but it sounded like they weren't going to give him the freedom, or he just didn't want to be tied down to a bigger company, and he just wanted to do what he did. And that's what he's been doing, and I think he's happy doing that. Like, and that's kind of what you can appreciate. Like, true art seems to be, like, there's always a tension, because art and business are sort of like forces that work with each other and against each other at the same time. It's a strange...
Yeah, look, I understand why this film, because this Henry Fonda, like, shooting a film like this, it's very difficult because you don't have spectacle, right? This is, the spectacle comes from being articulate, you know, being managing to put two characters in a room and make it interesting. This is so hard to do, right? Of course, when you have a killer sofa killing people, that is the thing, right? You know, it's like, oh, okay, that's the spectacle. But Hal Hartley, he doesn't need all that artifice, you know, he doesn't need all those extras to make something interesting. But most times, the mainstream audience, they need something spectacular. And you see with the Marvel movies and all that, you know, explosions on the screen, because that's easy, right? In a way, like, oh yeah, big building explodes. Yeah, yeah, okay, you're watching it, right? Where you see a Hal Hartley scene and there's just two guys, you know, talking in a basement, right? And it's like, so I understand why, you know, these types of movies don't go really big, because they can't really, you know, because people want something else from movies these days, which is a shame. And I'm guilty of that. You know, I go to the movies to watch Avatar. You know, I don't know if I pay $50 to watch like Henry Fool in IMAX, right? It just doesn't make sense, unfortunately. But yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that's not what the people want, unfortunately, or most people in the majority. But yeah, we had a couple of themes that we pointed out that we thought we could talk about. The first one was the meaningful one. We kind of touched on that, but we could go a little bit deeper. I was thinking, so remarkability of movies. So we're thinking about, what is the deepest theme of this movie? We recognize that line between Mary and Simon as the thesis of this movie. What would you say the deepest theme in this movie is?
The theme of this movie, let me think, I don't know. What do you think? While you're talking, maybe I can make a mind.
Yeah, no, that's good. We were thinking that it was possibly just what is art in general, you know? We see a lot. I mean, there is obviously commentary upon art, upon writing, upon literary types of things. And, you know, you have just different ways, like you look at the methods of how, like not literary devices, people write things, I guess. That's the dumbest way of saying it, but the way that people write things. And then just the background of it, you know, like you said, the politics. And then there was the editor, and there was all these people going on as well, and just a commentary on the whole system of how it works. And you might have some similarities to the film industry as you've directed a movie, just kind of like getting your art out there, getting your project out there, just kind of about that. And then just also like, what do people see as art? Because I'll just read this real quick. Simon's poem, you know, had many different interpretations by many different people. I'll list what they were. So Henry liked it, then it made that the mute daughter talk, and then Vicky came in the place and she said it was pornography. Exactly. The school board said it was pornography. Then Faye's period came a week and a half early by reading it. Then the church said it was emblematic of modern society's moral disintegration. And then the mother was made to play piano, and then Owen Fear talked about it, and then the Pope talked about it, and then the UN General Assembly talked about it. So it's like, it really did spiral, but it started with just a few people either liking it or disliking it. So it's kind of just the interpretation of art in general was definitely commented on.
Yeah, that's why you know it's good art, and it's good because it triggers emotions, right? It triggers some kind of change in people's lives, right? And that's why Woody wrote whatever it was, it's brilliant in a way. Of course, there's always taste, right? It's not for everybody. But when it comes to theme, now that I'm thinking a little bit about it, what theme? Of course, this is an exploration of what it is to be an artist and, you know, the life of an artist and art itself, you know. I think what Harry says at some point, which is, an honest man is always in trouble. And I think that is a brilliant way of putting it, because Harry is an honest man, right? Maybe his morals are not what society considers to be the perfect person, but he is honest. He always says what he thinks, and he doesn't care, right? And is this honesty that forces Simon to become what he's supposed to be, which is a writer, right? And Simon is also honest, because he's the most humble guy you can imagine, right? And he puts himself through the hardship of becoming a writer. He gets punched for it. His family laughs about it when he says, oh, I'm writing a poem. And there's that delicious scene where his mother and his sister just laugh at him, right? And he's just there taking it. And so that's probably the theme for the film. I think art needs to be honest, right? And which is ironic, because, you know, the movie is very, very, what's the word when it's like, I can't think about it now, but it's like presumptuous, right? It's like, it's super presumptuous what he writes about. It's obviously something very intellectual, and not a lot of people understand it. But yeah, I think that would be the theme for me, you know. It's, at least as a filmmaker, I always try to make the theme, like, the theme normally comes at the beginning of the film where they explain to you what the story is going to be about. And I really haven't, you know, didn't have time to analyze the film as a critic, because one, I cannot do that. I don't know how to do that. Some people are brilliant at it, but I'm not. But yeah, that's what I would say it is, okay, you know, like, it's about honesty in art. Yeah. I don't know if this makes
sense. Yeah, I think that does definitely make sense within the movie, and kind of goes off what Zach was saying, the thesis of, like, it revolves around art, but also, like, the purpose of art and what people go through as artists. One of the things that I thought really was kind of stuck out to me about where the film was maybe, like, layered in a couple ways was, like, when I forget what the publisher's name is, but whenever he's talking to his other you know, associates, which is, I thought that was one of the more hilarious scenes when they're just sort of, like, bantering back and forth. But it kind of shows, like, how the business mind works in relation to this stuff, saying, like, describing someone who's, like, a stereotype of Henry, and saying, we need this, like, person, this is what's going to be popular. And it sort of, like, it feels like it devalues the original intention of the art, because it's, like, taking a stereotype and it's just saying, we need more of this, let's manufacture that. But then when Henry actually comes, he's like, oh, this is not that good, so I'm sorry, I'm not going to publish you. And he waits until it goes maybe a little bit ahead of its time on this point, but it goes viral on the internet, which I'm not sure how big of a thing that was in 1998. Yeah. But this maybe was one of the first things that went viral.
I think it was quite ahead of its time, like something going viral in those days. I mean, internet was just, you know, it was when it started to be a thing, right? And I love when he brings the computer, and it's like a very old computer, and they ask him, where did you get this? And I'm like, I stole it, but let's talk about something else. Like, and you're like, okay. This is amazing, man.
That is funny. And so you see, like, everything just sort of, like, goes together. It's sort of, I don't know whether self-referential is the right, but it's referential. It's like an artistic piece about art. So you get that sort of thing, which I, like, nowadays, like, stuff that's meta and self-referential is, like, on steroids. I don't know, like Zach and I like watching, like, Rick and Morty, so we always bring that up whenever stuff, like, or there's a TV show in America called Community. Those kinds of shows that just, like, played on meta humor and stuff. But it's interesting to see that, like, maybe in its earlier time, in a different sense. It's not quite the same thing, but where it's, like, somebody who is an artist just commenting on art and coming up with these, like you said, it's presumptuous, or maybe it's a bit I'm also struggling for the word. I know there's a word that I want to
pious.
Not bias. It's pious. Like when you think you're better than pious. Other people. Pious, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a word. I mean, I'm not English, but
It'll come to it'll probably come to all of us at the same time.
But it's
So it has a sense that, like, it's above you, but it's also critiquing sort of that idea that you should do that as an artist. Because I don't know why this movie comes to mind, but there's a movie called Velvet Buzzsaw that wasn't really even that good of a movie that came out a couple years ago. I mean, it was an okay movie, but the most interesting thing about it to me was the world of, like, painting and business that I had never really thought about. Because, like, people, you know, look at paintings that, you know, Da Vinci or any number of artists, Picasso, made, and they just take it for granted that, like, those are great pieces of art. But really, like, there's a lot of, like, branding and, like, name association that goes along with, like, establishing that something is a good piece of art, and that starts in the business world, and it probably to some extent always has. So like, just seeing how these, like, it keeps coming back to it, but it's something that, like, I feel like I don't think about that much, maybe because I'm not really an artist. Like, I've never really been in the artistic world, so I've never really had to think about it. But like, the way that we value things, and, like, like the intentions of the artist, or like even does it have to be a tortured artist? Like Simon sort of could represent this like tortured artist stereotype that like in order to be a good artist you have to go through so many hard things in order to like express yourself.
Yeah, the movie introduces that idea, which is a very, you know, noble way of doing things, like you have to suffer to be a good artist. Whereas Henry, you have a feeling he's not tortured at all, you know, tortured. He's not a tortured soul. It's like, this is a guy who likes prostitutes, who goes and drinks, who takes drugs. Like, he's living the life of the artist, right? But he's very bad at it. But Simon is exactly the opposite. He's a shy guy, works as a garbage man. He looks after his daughter and his mom. And yeah, but he has the goods, right? And yeah, it's a great exploration of what it's like to be an artist, I suppose. I suppose because I don't know if I'm an artist, but I make films, and it's a very boring and monotonous. It's a monotonous thing, right? It's like it's a crafty thing, and when I see movies like this that bring like the poetry of what it's like to be an artist seeing from the outside, I love it, man, because this is what I thought it would be when I was like 18, right? And I thought, oh man, this is the life I want to live. But after doing this for 20 years, you're like, well, this is just waking up, going and sitting on the computer and just writing, right? It's not as glorious as this, right? That's why I love this film so much, right?
Yeah, I agree. I think another theme that we kind of thought about was just, there was a line by the editor and his assistant. It was when they were trying to let Simon come in to read his poems, and and at first he rejects and says no, make him schedule like a month or two ahead, but it was, you know, be on the lookout for more marginalized verse from unestablished quarters of the American scene, controversial or pretty marginal. So we were wondering if that was almost a prediction of what art would be like these days as well, of putting out either new voices or going too far and excluding some and in search of just particular voices. We were just thinking it did touch upon that, because that is a big aspect of art, we think, right now. No matter what people think of it, I think it's very apparent that who talks is important, but also that this movie is kind of like ahead. 1998, right? Yeah, it's kind of ahead, like in the fact that it's saying these things that would be words that would be spoken constantly in our society today, especially in the American society. I don't know how it is over there right now, but it's just like it's very much that way. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think like it almost, there's a moment where the guy, I forget his name, but he sees this politician, right, this governor who's trying to be like, he thinks he's going to be the president of the United States. Man, that guy for me is Trump, right? It's like, oh yeah, somebody says, oh, this guy's a Nazi, man. This is like, I don't understand why, you know, people like him. And yeah, it's ahead of its time. It's like, but maybe there's always been in American society these characters who are like Trump-like figures, right? They've always existed. For me, I'm not there, so I don't know. For me, it was Trump. Like, it was like, oh my God, how did this guy become president? But obviously, you know, there's been guys like that, right? Because Hal Hartley wrote about somebody like that, right? And that is a part of why this movie is, I think, it's so ahead of its time. And it's like, exactly, I mean, you can say that Hal Hartley was a prophet in a way, because it's almost like we live in the days of the wokeness, right, where they're trying to bring diversity to films and blah blah blah, with all the problems that that brings, right? We saw it in Star Wars and all of that stuff, right? And obviously the way the publisher describes what they're looking for, yeah, I've heard that conversation many times. It's like filling gaps, like, okay, we need somebody from a third world country that has been successful last year just to make us look good as a publisher or as a, you know. Yeah, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. It is what it is, right? And it's like,
yeah, and I had to look up the year for this movie when I was watching it, because I was like, that's how it is today. When did this come out? Is this recent? But no, in 1998, the US president was Bill Clinton, so maybe he was talking about Bill Clinton. We don't know.
Bill Clinton.
But, yeah.
Well, it calls they called him a Nazi at some point, right?
Oh, so yeah.
It's hard to think, like, Bill Clinton is, you know, had a lot of problems, but the Nazi being a Nazi was not one of them.
That was not
them,
a claim, right? Yeah.
It was one. yeah, it was not a claim.
Yeah.
So one of the things that you had mentioned at the start was that you thought that Henry was framed for his crime that he committed when he slept with the 13-year-old and he went to prison for 7 years. So I think Zach and I both didn't necessarily get this impression from the film. So we were kind of wondering.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that's not the way to describe. It was not framed because he's guilty, right? And he says, I am guilty. But what I think the movie shows you is the exact situation happens later of some sort of what I imagine happened in the past, right? Where he has this girl, she's being abused, she promises him something, and he's going to the house. I don't think he wants what the girl is offering him, right? And he ends up killing the guy, and he ends up in that situation where he's going to jail again by trying to be a good man, right? And what tells me, you know, of course, analyzing the film, that whatever happened in the past might be a similar situation, is when he's trying to escape the country, his parole officer is the one who gives him a passport to do so.
Right.
So when you think about it, it's like, why would somebody who represents the law, right, would help this guy escape if he didn't know that when he was convicted the first time, he shouldn't have been convicted, but he had to, in a way, if this makes any sense, right? Anyway, that's why I think this guy deserves redemption, right? That's what I'm...
Yeah, no, that's a thought I had not heard of. With his parole officer, that is interesting because I was a little surprised at the end when everybody was helping him escape. I thought Simon had come to call the cops on him to like hold him there, and that they would come and arrest him. But then apparently he went and got the passport. I thought they were using the passport as like an identification so they could bring the cops in. But no, that's not what happened. So it was cool. It is something I didn't notice at all that you noticed. I mean, you've seen it more than us. So that is because the poor. I mean, now that I really think about it, like the parole officer would have had to assume that he would have, that he wouldn't have done that by like without reason of doubt. You know, it's like
But it comes to poetic justice because we as an audience, we know he's not guilty, right? I mean, he was trying to do the right thing. He took the girl home, and then he ended up being in this kind of fight with the guy, and he. You know, the guy just jumped on the knife and he got killed, right? And but the ending is ambiguous because you don't know. It's a brilliant shot, like you see him running, like that's the final shot of the film, right? But you don't know if he's escaping or if he's running to the airplane or if he's running back, right? So it leaves that hanging, like, oh, okay, so did he have a change of heart and he realized he cannot spend his life running away from problems? Or no, it's just getting the hell out of there, right? That's why I like it, man. I watch it and I don't know. It's like, it depends on how I'm feeling that day. Sometimes I think, yeah, he's going back, of course. But sometimes I think, no,
I
man.
I did question that, where he was, what direction he was running. Because there was a plane in the background, but it wasn't the plane he was about to get on. So, I mean, obviously the angle's purpose, yeah.
But I think that was on purpose. I think they... Yeah, there was shot on purpose like that. I think I would have done that, like, because that is the smart way to do it. Like, he's running and there's the music builds up and you're like, oh man, where is he going? And
yeah,
beautiful.
No, I agree. another thing that we're thinking about, so the and we can close after this, there was there was a scene where we have this juxtaposition of these two characters, Henry and Simon, and there was a scene where Henry finds this copper gasket that Simon identifies as a copper gasket from maybe the fridge over there, and he thinks of it as like a ring right away, right? I think that also symbolizes the way that the characters think, and it even goes on to become their marriage ring unintentionally when he's on the toilet, which is such a gag, but it's it's just a way that it's a symbolic way of displaying who these characters are and how they view life. You know, Simon is seeing it as like, you know, we think of Henry as this truth teller, right? And he sees this thing larger than life, of course, you know. But Simon just identifies it as it is, and that shows that their writing styles are different too.
Yeah.
You know, maybe Simon's getting right at the core of reality, and Henry's just trying to dress up reality in his writings. I don't know.
Yeah, that's such a... I forgot about that scene, and it's just like... You've seen it so many times, somebody proposing to someone, and that is like the ultimate, like... Like, he goes to have a shit because he knows the girl is pregnant, and she's like, yes, I accept. And he's not asking her to marry him, right? He's just having a shit there in the toilet. And that is such a brilliant way of putting it, of making a scene that you've seen it thousands of times and making it original and something that mm-hmm. I haven't seen before. Or, you know,
yeah, and right
since,
after that disgusting part, I got but so yeah, grossed out.
Yeah, and Zach and I are both going into healthcare fields, and we should be ready for it. But that scene just keeps going. It's a masterclass in making your audience uncomfortable. That's for sure. I want to circle back. I had one comment on like the closing scene there. I thought it was cool how they tied in all of the characters pretty much at the end, even like the pastor who's just like randomly in a couple of scenes. I think they even get advice from him at one point, like. He's kind of a strange character who's just like interlaid throughout the movie. But like they're all there. It's like they all want this guy to get away. And it's like, you're like, what did they see in this guy that made them want to help this guy out? But there was something.
I mean, this guy brought a lot of change to the community, right? He changed everybody who touched him somehow got changed, right? He didn't change throughout the movie. Harry doesn't need to change, right? But he brings change. He's the outsider who makes everybody... just kind of makes Faye get a job, makes Simon win a Nobel Prize, you know, makes, the father, the priest, is having doubts, and Harry comes and tells him, look, you know, it's human to have doubts, right? He's a guy who always has some kind of advice, right? That's why everybody helps him, everybody comes together to help him in the end, and it kind of makes sense, it brings, you know, I think it's the perfect finale for something like this, right? And the thing he always wanted, you know, he's pretending to be the artist he always thought he was going to be. Like, the passport, possibly what they did is put Harry's photo on Simon's passport, right? And he's going to Sweden, and everybody's treating him like a true poet, you know, which he isn't, right? He was a janitor for the publisher, right? And so... I think it's such a poetic and beautiful moment in the end, right? And he's going with it, man, because he wants to get out of there. You know, an honest man is always in trouble. That's what he is.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I think with that, we'll wrap up the movie review section of this podcast. And then we're also going to do a little bit of Outside the Vault, which is our sort of second tier here at the Movie Vault, where we do things that aren't related to movie reviews. So Bernie, so I one last thing, I guess, before we have a goofy thing that we do here where we close the vault. It's sort of a figurative thing where like we live in the vault. Okay. And I don't know, we've sort of played it out over the years. I wanted to know, like, so this is one of your favorite movies. What are some of your other favorite movies or directors?
Let's see. I mean, John Carpenter, for example, I think he's a brilliant filmmaker. And possibly early John Carpenter, when he didn't have money and he had a lot of enthusiasm, he made masterpieces, which I think are masterpieces like The Thing. They Live is such an amazing film. Right, you know, Halloween, you know, when he started getting into Vampires of Mars, that's when things started getting a little bit weird, but I still think it's brilliant, you know. But I think he's a filmmaker I love, for example, that's one. And of course, I mean, I will not talk about the great filmmakers, Kubrick and, you know, Spielberg. Of course, they are masters of their craft, right? Tarantino is, man, the way he writes dialogues is brilliant. I tend to gravitate towards filmmakers like Hal Hartley and Jim Jarmusch, the one I talked about earlier. There's a guy I love, man. It's like Aki Kaurismäki. He's a guy from Finland. He makes films like this type of film, right? And I don't know. I mean, there's filmmakers like. This is gonna sound super pretentious, but I don't care. It's like
that's Ingmar the word Bergman. I was looking for. I love that was the word.
Pretentious, yeah, yes. Exactly. Ingmar Bergman, I love his films. Like, some Russian filmmakers that I love.
Do you like Tarkovsky at all?
Yeah, Tarkovsky, brilliant filmmaker. Yeah. I just watched Stalker. I don't know if you guys watched that.
I've only seen Solaris Stalker? And Ivan's Childhood, but Stalker's on my list.
Yeah. Stalker is an amazing story. Like, they went to shoot in this chemical plant, and they all got cancer from shooting there. It was an intense...
I did not realize
it was
that.
Like, the main actor died some years later because they were shooting in conditions which are completely... you know, awful conditions. And you see that in the movie, right? They're like in these kind of puddles with all this kind of chemical stuff, and the actors are just walking through that shit. And it's an insane story, but Tarkovsky, I love him as well. And of course, and there's, you know, filmmakers like Kevin Smith and which are an inspiration for someone like me growing in the 90s, right? Like Robert Rodriguez and all those types of filmmakers. But yeah, those are the types of, you know, I'm not sure. I mean, I have some filmmakers I follow. I don't watch a lot of modern movies, to be honest. I just have other things. I make movies. I love to make it. I love the craft of just getting the camera and shooting a story. But for me, I'm more like into watching like older stuff. I don't know, it just transports me to another type of reality.
Yeah,
we've
actually been going back in time because we've been disappointed by most of the movies this year that have come out in 2022 at least. So we've definitely done some older films recently. To us, older at least. I don't know if other people would consider them old, but I don't know.
I kind of watch movies. For example, I just watched the series The Rings of Power, which I think some people hate. I mean, I do visual effects for a living, you know, I'm part of that crowd who makes this kind of shitty stuff that people think is shitty. But I think, you know, they did an amazing job there. Like, visual effects, if you're into that type of stuff and you understand what they achieved there, I think, man, that's brilliant. You know, and more people hate it, the more I love it. I don't know. It's like, maybe it's just me. I don't know.
All right. Yeah. Well, with that, I'm going to close the vault, I guess. And so I'm going to make a little sound effect with my voice to signify that the voice is closed. But this isn't the last you'll hear Bernie Ray on the movie vault. All right. The vault is closing. Yeah, so that's pretty much the cheapest you can get with audio effects.
Brilliant.
Right. Yeah, I guess we're in the independent podcaster world. If Hal Hartley would probably be proud of us for sticking with our roots and not selling out, right?
Oh yeah, for sure, man.